Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And we have, I understand there's a new movie out, Much Ado About Nothing has come out again. We got to go see that because it's the story of our life.
I'm excited about that, yes.
It is, it is Much Ado About Nothing or A Comedy of Errors.
Those would both be good, or...
Yes, yes. And we could combine them.
The Tempest would be good as well.
The Tempest? Yeah, that's a little more serious. Have,
as only if you had it in a teacup.
Okay, well,
so,
that's good.
Comedy of Errors, Tempest in a teacup, Much Ado About Nothing, all of these things.
Yeah. Well,
clichés.
You know, one of the things I wanted to talk about, first we probably ought to say that this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone number is calling here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
One of the things that has been painfully obvious for economists and those of us who actually watch this is that had the federal government not severely restricted its spending earlier this year, the United States economy would probably be growing at about 3%, which is a good, healthy growth rate. The government is right now the number one drag on the economy, and a lot of people are upset about that.
It's what their job is, I think.
And the interesting thing is, according to the reports from the office, from the Congressional Budget Office and Office of Management and Budget and all those folks, and economists in general, it's entirely possible we will close out this year with a budget deficit of 4%. Now, you may think...
4% of what?
Of the GDP.
Very nice.
The point is that next year, presuming that any reasonable course is followed that we can see coming up, we will probably be in the interesting position where the budget deficit is less than the GDP. Now, what that means is...
Wait a minute. Budget deficit is less than the growth in GDP.
Okay. The
hopefully
budget,
we're not
well,
having...
Well, it's way the heck less than the
hopefully,
GDP.
Hopefully, yes.
But the growth, in other words, the growth in our debt, including all interest that we have to pay and everything else, will be lower than the growth in the GDP. What that means is, at that point, we effectively begin to pay off our debts.
Correct.
Rather than get deeper in debt. Oddly enough...
Well, that's not necessarily true. What we're looking for is enough growth in revenue so that the revenue will eventually pay for that year's debt.
Generally, over time, what you want to do is have any growing economy needs to increase its debt. However, because debt is what we use for money,
yeah,
and so we need to have an increase. Oddly enough, we need to have an increase in debt of the United States in order to keep from going bankrupt, which... is I know that's a very counterintuitive way of approaching things, but Dell found that out a number of years ago when they realized they had a no-debt policy and almost went bankrupt over it.
Well, it's true in normal people's lives, too. If you want to buy a house and you don't have the cash to buy it all at once, or even if you do, you have just enough cash to buy it all at once, and you buy it all at once, well, how are you going to live for the next couple of months?
Yeah, and so the point is that entirely possible we will see our total debt load, which, by the way, again, in all the countries in the developed world, ours is the lowest. And our debt load as a percentage of GDP to actually start to fall. Now, that's a good thing.
Well, it's the lowest in the developed world, except for some Northern European countries.
Well, when I say the lowest of any major...
Major economies.
I'm sure. Like, I don't know what the deficit is in Luxembourg, and I don't care.
Switzerland. Luxembourg is not doing so well. Switzerland's doing very well.
But the point is that if we take the Eurozone or we take the European Union, which is comparable in size to the United States, okay, major developing. Major developed countries. We have the lowest debt to GDP ratio.
Their main export is not cheese, chocolate, or clocks.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So the point that I wanted to make here is that we have a potential stumbling block going forward, though. And the potential stumbling block is that if, as a matter of principle, the members of the House of Representatives to decide to take a very, very, very principled stand and push us to the edge of the cliff, if you will, again this fall. That will coincide with a significant cut in government spending as sequester takes place. And I don't really see anybody unpassing sequester at this point. I'm sure the Senate would love to and the President would love to, but I don't think the Republicans in the House would go for that. And so we've got the potential later on this year for some severe bumps. This is the point I want to make in this, though. The rest of the economy is doing very well. The reason we're having a slow recovery, and by the way, the Chinese mentioned this in China. The equivalent of the Secretary of the Treasury, the Minister of Finance in China, mentioned that their prospects for the future are assuming and dependent upon a slow but relatively steady recovery in the United States economy.
Yeah.
Did you get that? That means that the Chinese are, A, think we're going to have a slow but steady recovery, B, are dependent upon it, which means...
It actually means at this point it's not a recovery. At this point we're talking about actual growth above where we were when we fell.
Well, it's recovery in the sense that until we get to the point where we have unemployment down to normal levels and what's called capacity utilization, in other words, the ability to utilize what we call our capital investment, our buildings,
right,
and so on,
yeah,
up to historic normal levels, in a sense, we're still recovering, and that's what they're referring to.
And the reference here, this, anytime we talk about the large economic spectrum, it gets into all kinds of weirdness. The GDP is now bigger than it was before the recession. However, we've added a lot of people to the workforce since then. We've added lots of people graduating from colleges and people that are out of high school and people have moved to the country. And so when we say that our employment levels are the same as they were, well, we've got a lot more people to employ than we did 4 years ago, 5 years ago, which it's strange to think that 5 years ago is when this all started. The downturn, the recession and craziness seems like it was yesterday.
Well, maybe it was.
It was somebody's yesterday.
Yeah, it was somebody's yesterday. So just one of the things to be aware of, it's twofold in this interview. Look, obviously, we're broadcasting in Central Texas. If you're listening somewhere else, then it isn't as relevant to you. Government's spending is being cut, and it's falling fairly quickly. The Secretary of Defense has stated that there will be some severe troop reductions. There probably have to be long-term. The commander, Fort Hood, has warned about troop reductions here. I can tell you that the number of civilians employed in the Fort Hood area by the federal government, with probably a 95% or better certainty, I can forecast that a year from now there will be a lot fewer of them working for the federal government and being paid.
Yeah.
Or if they are working, they're going to be working for a lot fewer days, and they will be not have as much money to spend. Locally
even,
in the economy, it's going to be painful.
Right. Even if something is passed and they change sequester and they don't do the same kind of across-the-board cuts, no one in the government right now is saying we're going to increase the size of the military. They're saying we're leaving Afghanistan in 2014.
Uh-huh.
We've got to pay for some damaged equipment, that sort of thing. What's that?
What's that?
Yes, I've got computer started playing.
I didn't hear anything.
Audio okay. For me. Anyway,
they've actually talked about increasing the size of the Navy.
Correct. Yeah, and
but
that's
we don't have a lot of naval personnel here in the middle of Central
no.
And we do have some.
The Navy. The reason why they would increase the size of the Navy is to protect commerce. That makes mm-hmm. sense. It makes a lot of sense from an economic perspective. But right now we have
the Army to increase the Navy.
Yeah, and our budget for the military right now is huge. When we consider the fact that there are one war still going and one that there is still contract support going for, as that peters down, the budget for contract work and for military work is going to drop. It's just going to happen. There's not that doesn't have anything to do with whether or not we have sequester next year. We're going to have the civilian side of military work is going to dry up.
Yeah, and it's a given over the long term that the military has to reduce its personnel structure. I realize that's a little strange, but I can tell you that a long time ago, back in the early 1970s, I remember this. Unfortunately, I'm old enough to remember this, or fortunately, as the case may be.
Because you're old.
Yeah, I am old. The actuary said when we went from a draft to volunteer services
mm-hmm.
in the military, and we raised the pay to do that, they said you either have to dramatically cut military retirements, and this is interesting, I remember the dates, or sometime between 2030 and 2040, you could no longer afford to have an active duty military. You could no longer afford to have a defense policy because the total retirement benefits would be the same percentage as, now this is the 1970s when we had Russia right over there, you know, we had the Cold War going. They said that the retirement expense would be the percentage of the gross domestic product that the total defense budget is.
Well, 2 years ago, this is a minor footnote that happened in the budget, but worth noting as a footnote or a hand note or whatever they call these notes these days. Retired military pay is more than active duty military pay.
Well, that's been on for a while.
Yeah, that's several years. Several years that's been the truth. That means that the government is spending more money on retirees for the military than they're spending on active duty military personnel.
I want to emphasize now,
we still have a big bunch of expenses in there for equipment and things that unless the retirees are owning Abrams tanks or Apache helicopters, they aren't quite spending. But
I want to emphasize we are not objecting to the United States military paying retired military
absolutely
people.
Absolutely no objection
We're not in that position of trying to say stop paying retired military people. But if you're doing financial planning, both locally and in general, for your business or for your personal life, there's a couple of issues that you probably ought to be aware of. Military spending on personnel is rising significantly faster than the growth in the economy.
Correct.
A big chunk of that is retired pay. Therefore,
another chunk of that is disability pay.
And what you really need to look at is how did corporations handle this successfully? And this is what, believe me, the folks in the government are looking at. And then what
some
they
corporations
did,
didn't handle it successfully at
all. And the government's not going to go bankrupt over this because the government can do whatever it wants to do, unlike corporations. However, there's a couple of ways that corporations handle this. Number one, they basically killed the retirement system for a lot of people.
Went
but
to
their
401ks.
Existing retirees, sometimes they're resisting it, the existing retirees got cut. But the key issue is it's going to be a while before this becomes a hypercritical situation. Folks in the government are aware of it. Folks in Congress are aware of it. That means that as we go forward, they're going to do what General Motors had to go through bankruptcy to do, which is they're going to increase automation and shrink the number of people and change the retirement program.
If you think about what General Motors went into bankruptcy for, is they were paying retirees more than their active personnel. And that was true in healthcare as well as retirement benefits. So to build a vehicle, General Motors had to first pay their retirees, then buy the parts, then put the vehicle together and sell it. And because of that, they weren't able to sell it at the low price that other people that didn't have to pay for retirees and for health. Well, when we're talking about the government's job primarily is not to pay retirees.
Yes, it is.
Depends on if you're a retiree.
You look at the budget.
Yes, if you look at the budget, it's the case. But at some
primary
point,
primary job of the United States government is to pay Social Security, Medicare, and government retirement.
Right, and unfortunately, when we say this, a lot of the military retirees think that we're advocating for it. It is not the case. We're trying to look at reality. At some point, Congress is going to look around and say, do we pay someone that is elderly?
Well,
Or do we pay someone who's working in a second career that has a retirement already?
I am optimistic, and I think what they're going to do is simply change it now for future retirees.
Yeah, at some point,
And not affect existing retirees. I
hope that's the case.
But the reason I bring that up is locally here in Bell County, a huge portion of our economic well-being devolves from having a lot of soldiers and military civilians employed by the military or contracted by the military. This is not a particularly pretty picture going forward here. So just it's one of those things to be aware of. We have gotten used to during the Cold War and in the even in the period following the Cold War, except for one minor blip in 1991, right after the Cold War was over, effectively, we have gotten used to having a huge emphasis on the military because during the Cold War, we had a Cold War going. During the, after 9/11,
we had the War on Terror.
We had the War on Terror
going. Iraq and Afghanistan.
And
Pakistan.
In 1991, even when we started to slow things down, Iraq invaded Kuwait at just the right moment to get the money cranked up again. This is not sustainable, nor is it normal. Normal is a vastly decreased army from what we're seeing today.
I don't know that there is a normal.
Well, when I say normal, a sustainable military budget can be looked at in the history of Great Britain. We can look at it in France's history. And we surge upward to a non-sustainable level in military expenditures when we're faced with a threat.
Yes.
We can maintain that for a long time.
If the threat's big enough.
But this is in what we're talking about with the retirement program. We have a lot of deferred cost in there, and the deferred cost is still building out into the future. Mm-hmm. And those who are seriously concerned about the United States deficit, Jake and I have talked about this. The big long-term debt the United States government faces is taking care of older people, and the most expensive older people that they take care of are the ones who used to wear uniforms or who used to be civilian employees of the government. Well, the number of civilian employees is shrinking pretty fast, and I think we're going to continue to see that, more and more contracted out. It's really, really hard to contract out being a soldier.
No, you can't contract out being a soldier. When you try, you get all kinds of weird atrocities. That's not good.
Well, they did with Blackwater for a while.
Yeah, that's what I mean, all kinds of weird atrocities.
So, but the point is that just be aware that a big chunk of our slow recovery right now is because the government is doing exactly what most of the people in this area want them to do, which is reduce their spending. And we're going to have some difficulties with that this year. But the underlying civilian economy is doing very well. And we probably need to break for some commercials.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone numbers, we got a call. We'll stop the commercials. We'll take the call, 773-1400.
Stop the commercials.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've got a question. Where is that level we're located at?
Excuse me?
With the bomb?
With what?
The tickets for Schlitterbahn?
Schlitterbahn?
Yeah, you're giving away?
We're not giving away tickets.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Wrong radio station.
Yeah, on the air, though.
It can happen. So
to the commercials.
Back to the commercials.
Schlitterbahn got a commercial.
That was nice. Yeah. We'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
So, you got anything? I mean, I got some stuff.
Got some stuff here.
And we got a telephone call, 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was calling about y'all's promotion that y'all are having at that Sears. Can you tell me where it is?
We have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah,
right,
we
thank
do.
Thank you.
That's the second call. Somebody is giving out our telephone number?
I guess. I guess they are having a promotion. Maybe KTM is having
a promotion. Sears and it's Schlitterbahn.
I guess.
News to me. If somebody knows, if you got Schlitterbahn tickets that I'm supposed to be giving away, that's cool.
I want some Schlitterbahn tickets.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, back from Sears. Corporate tax rates is going to approach this because it's getting a lot of attention right now, and it's kind of needed a lot of attention for a long time. We now have the highest corporate tax rates in the universe. I know this because I did a poll of the local galaxy and found that corporate tax rates are not anywhere near as high off of Beta 3 or Vega 1. The corporate tax rates are at 35.2% as the top tax rate, and then you get to that top tax rate really quickly. And a lot of the corporations that have money overseas have earned it overseas, paid taxes overseas, unless they're in places like Ireland where they paid very little taxes overseas. That money needs to come back here, and talking about closing corporate loopholes where we're going to tax money two or three times when it comes back to the United States and it's a loophole by leaving it over there, we don't get to tax it a second and third time. I think that's kind of silly. So it's something that most people in the United States are completely unaware of, that corporate tax rates. First, if you are an investor, which is most of the people listening to this program, when you get a dividend, it's already been taxed at the corporate rate. Then you get it as a dividend, and you pay taxes on it when you receive it as income. So now you, who are an owner of the corporation, are taxed on it at the corporate level and then taxed again at the personal level. If that dividend was originally earned overseas, it was taxed overseas wherever it was earned. If it was brought back to the United States so that you could get the dividend, it was taxed at the corporate level. Then it was sent to you as a dividend and taxed at the personal rate. I think there's a little bit of problem there.
There may be. But we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Person Wealth Coach. No, I guess we don't have a caller on 773.
It's probably Sears and...
batting 1,000 on this thing today.
Yeah, so the corporate tax rate issue... There's a big article on Yahoo, which came from Reuters, and there's a lot of people talking about it right now, about should we abolish the IRS?
Huh?
Yeah, and I'm going, what?
I don't think very many people suggesting
it. I think it's Lois Lane talking about, who is that Superman fellow? I don't have a clue.
You could abolish the Internal Revenue Service, which meant that we would have no more internal revenue, and we'd have no more government,
right,
and we'd have no more money, and we'd have no more
country. A completely new tax system, which would be very nice.
Somebody's got to enforce it.
You got to have somebody, even if we have the fair tax, which, by the way, both of us are clear proponents of. We love the idea of the fair tax. But even if you have a fair tax, it's still somebody's paying taxes. It's generally businesses when you're talking about the fair tax, which means that you would have to have people enforcing that the businesses pay the tax, just like we do in Texas. We have a group of people in Austin that send people out to businesses and make sure that they're paying taxes. They send out really scary letters, just like the IRS does. It's just that most people that don't own businesses in Texas never get one of those letters from a Texas government. So abolishing the IRS, good idea, only if you have another methodology in place. So,
and there is another.
Right, and it goes back to, again, Lois Lane. But when a big headline comes up there, should we abolish the IRS?
No.
It's silliness. I mean, everybody can go, oh, yes, we want to, we hate the IRS. But how we pay for things like Social Security and many other things is the IRS is involved with that.
Another aspect that that came in was the producer price index.
Yes.
And it jumped 0.8% in June. But however, if we take a look and see what it was in it that jumped, only one thing jumped, and that was the price of fuel, which bobs around all over the place.
And that has a lot more to do with Egypt than with anything else.
And if we look at the core producer price index, now that sounds like a geeky number, but basically it is total cost at the wholesale level, total cost of things produced here in the good old United States or brought into the United States.
Right.
It rose 0.2%. Now, if we look at the annualized average, the moving average over time, over the last 4 months, its annualized rate of growth is 1.7%. And one of the governors in the Federal Reserve, Bullard, who is a very influential fellow, and he's also a voting member, points out that we're having a trend downward in inflation, and that it could easily drop based on the data that they're getting now, and we'll see more on the 16th when the Consumer Price Index comes out for last month. But based on the data that the Fed is getting right now, it looks like we may see the actual Consumer Price Index drop below 1%. We have a caller on 773-1400 again.
You're going to take that right after talking about it may need some explanation.
Well, the point is if it drops below 1%, Bullard says that that QE, the buying of bonds, should certainly not be stopped because deflation, the Fed's target is 2%.
Yes.
And if you drop below 2% very far, if you drop below 1.5%, and again, we just saw something that indicated 1.7 is what's happening at the producer level. If you drop below about 1.5% in the economy, a minor shock, and those happen, can easily put us into deflation.
Which is the
and that can put us into a depression in a very short period of time.
That's what started to happen in the Great Recession when we had the credit freeze. That was deflation. That's what happens with deflation. Inflation, banks are loaning out lots of money. Deflation, banks stop loaning money. You can't get a house. You can't get a car. Mm-hmm. You can't fund work at a company. There's a lot of things that you can't do. Deflation is very dangerous. Inflation is dangerous in the long run. Deflation can cripple us in a very short period of time.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I read or heard that Bernanke's term is almost up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he'll be renominated?
Or no.
If not, who do you think is on the ready bench, ready to step in? And what do you think that'll do to the stock market? Thank you.
Okay. Both Ben Bernanke has said that he doesn't want to be renominated, and Barack Obama has said he doesn't want to renominate him. So
it's a bad combination.
Between the two of them, I think neither Ben Bernanke is getting his job, nor will he be nominated. So,
well, you know, and
who's on the ready bench, though?
The Janet Yellen is the odd, and believe me, the bookies are making odds on this right now. Janet Yellen is the person who is the most likely person in at least the discussions that I have read. And the reason there's other people that obviously the president could put in there who are less well known and less in some ways they may be more qualified or less qualified. But the problem the issue with Janet Yellen is she's actually the deputy chairman. If Ben Bernanke were to suddenly have a heart attack and die today, she would instantly become the chairman of the Federal Reserve until somebody else could be promoted, nominated, and confirmed by the Senate. She probably would not have a great deal of difficulty getting through a Senate confirmation hearing. She's a known factor, and she is a consistent factor who will probably continue. Everything suggests she would continue the even-handed approach that we've seen so far and be willing to step in as Chairman Bernanke has in an emergency to do whatever is necessary.
It didn't sound quite right when you said it, and so I went looking.
Okay.
It's Janet Yellen.
It's Yellen. I'm
not
sorry.
Not Janice or Yeltsin.
Okay, Janet Yellen. I'm sorry.
See, that's what happens when we rely on our memories.
Where did I get Yeltsin?
From
Putin?
The Soviet, to the last Soviet person
became
the president of
You're
Russia.
You're right. Okay, Janet Yellen?
Janet Yellen, the small lady with a large IQ.
Yeah, and she's really smart, too.
Yes, she is.
I'm sorry about that. But she, The market, the point is, if we had somebody, you ask what effect it'll have on the market. If it is Janet Yellen, then it probably won't have any significant effect on the market. If for some amazing reason an unknown or a radical was nominated and selected by the Senate, it would be craziness, obviously, from the get-go. But
yeah, and she is she and Ben Bernanke have had long conversations on many occasions, and they view reality through the same looking glass.
Do you view reality through a looking glass?
Well, especially if you are named Alice, which she's not, but you know, I think I threw that one in there anyway.
Okay.
But we have a caller on 773-1400. Hopefully this isn't about Sears or about Schlitterbahn.
They gave up on us.
Yeah,
they're gone.
I gave up on us a long time ago.
Telephone numbers to call in here. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone numbers to call in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. One real quick thing, that just to wrap that up, the target for inflation and unemployment. And unemployment is a new target for the Federal Reserve. They were kind of given a recent new set of responsibilities to try to decrease unemployment in the United States. And their target right now is a 6.5 unemployment level, 6.5%.
Or better.
But again, if they get, they're a little afraid. We were down in the 4% range right before the bust. So 6.5% is a reasonable level to come down to. It's about a percentage less than what we have now.
And we have a caller on 773-1400, and you're on the air with a Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Well, you've got to hit the button there.
Got to do the button there. Now you're on the air with a Personal Wealth Coach.
When you come time to retire in your scenario, looking at your allotted math, when do you decide, do I have enough, or, oh, crud, I should probably get an annuity?
Well, I can't even imagine a situation where I'd recommend you get an annuity.
Yeah, if you didn't have enough to begin with, getting an annuity isn't going to help you much.
Yeah, all you've done is raise your risk level. When you have enough is when a reasonable rate of return that you're comfortable with, and that's going to vary from one person to another. There's kind of a rule of thumb of for people who are 4% draw.
I don't like rules of thumb.
You know, and it's very conservative, but again, the way most people invest, 4% may be excessive. If you can take 4% out of your retirement portfolio plus all your other sources of income, Social Security or whatever, and you're comfortable, well, then you probably could retire. And the reason we use 4%, by the way, the reason the general media and literature use 4% is because over the long term, inflation runs around 3%, and a well-balanced portfolio should, and believe me, people can screw this up easily, should be able to get about 7%. And so 4 + 3 = 7, therefore...
Really hurting your principal with inflation involved.
But that means that you really need to be a skillful investor to do that, or at least to know something about investing, which unfortunately most people don't.
What I would recommend is before you get to the point where you're sitting around and you think your retirement is really close, I realize this is hindsight's 2020 for some people, but beginning to plan, and if you haven't and you're there, then telling people that are younger than you to begin to plan, there is a wealth of information available to begin the process. It's just too much information is available, I think, and so it overloads people. They look at it and they say, what am I supposed to do? And generally speaking, what you said right there about an annuity. Annuity companies, life insurance companies, are the ones advertising the hardest right now. So we get that question a lot, and it doesn't make sense. Because annuities, as your fallback only way to go option in retirement, is pretty silly. It's like saying when you get ready to buy a car and you're not sure how well to go, when is it that you begin to think about buying gasoline?
It
doesn't quite fit the scenario. I'm not sure what was intended, but we get that question a lot.
It's really important to remember, if you consider purchasing an annuity, the annuity is backed by a single company. And if that single company let's say you're going to be retired for 30 years or however many years, and if that single company were to go become insolvent any point in the next 30 years, your money goes away. I mean, that's a very fundamental issue that I think people don't pay a lot of attention to. And it's, you know, part of it is the fact I think the next major downturn will be triggered by the one by the same kind of company that triggered the last major downturn and remained unregulated. It was AIG,
an insurance company.
And the reason AIG was scrambling for income that put them in a high risk position was because they were paying out high interest rates on annuities. Boom. Well, that's, if that's not frightening, it ought to be. But, you know, how much do you, how do you know when you're ready to retire? If you have a portfolio big enough to retire, big enough for you to live on,
even if that includes putting it in an annuity,
but then you need to hire a professional. And I don't mean go to a stockbroker who gets paid by commissions
or a life
financial advisor or a life insurance agent. You really need to be able to, and it's the same thing we were saying about attorneys earlier.
You need to go to a fiduciary,
somebody who will charge you. Yeah, you know, somebody will charge you fees. If you're not paying fees, I hate to break this to you, there's odds are somebody else is paying them, and they will be loyal, and they will work in the best interest of whoever's paying them.
Right, and we're a little prejudiced here. I can say we are fee-based, so that's that's what we do. And but when you look at it, we say we want people working for retirees that are working for the retiree, not for the company that is making money off of the retiree.
So we do need to break for commercials. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. On the other side of these about 2 minutes worth of commercials, you can give us a call in here at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And telephone number is in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. I have a real quick thing, kind of ties in with some of the other things that we were talking about. And it's government, and since we're bashing government, we should just go ahead and do it. The Financial Regulatory Reform Bill. Everyone out there just started drooling. I could hear it happening.
Frank.
I could hear it happening. People are drooling. We're going to talk about that. This, just like most of the other major financial or regulatory reforms that have taken place over the last few years, the government has done an abysmal job of getting the law actually into action. The Financial Regulatory Reform Bill, Dodd-Frank, has had far more deadline misses than it has had deadline hits. It has huge sections of the law that are supposed to have rules don't have rules yet. We've got a law for the Pension Protection Act of 2006 that the Labor Department has been trying to put out rules for, and this affects, you know, little things like your 401k, your IRA, things that everyone owns. There's a law that's been on the books now for 7 years that we don't have any guidelines on. And when we're talking, you know, people seem to be shocked about the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. They're missing a deadline here, and this is a horrible thing. You hear the big uproar from both sides of the political. We're not doing our jobs right. Well, that's probably true, just like the rest of the laws that you've been trying to get into action. It would be really nice if we had some true guidelines on how to act in, you know, we've got guidelines. You and I have guidelines on how to act. But most people out there, most people in the financial industry don't have guidelines based on the laws that were passed during and after the recession to protect investors. So the law's been passed. It's now made, they've done these great things to make sure it never happens again, only there are no rules yet for the law. They just say don't do something, but they don't say how not to do it. Anyway, that was a little bit of a soapbox. And if you have the chance to talk to your representative about following up on laws that actually exist and not being enforced properly.
Well, we have a caller on 773-1400. Let's go to that first. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, if we could jump back about 10 or 15 minutes ago, and without eating up the rest of the time on the show, could you explain this fare tax, what it is, and maybe in comparison to a sales tax, or are they both the same? What is the fare tax?
I'm just going to take a real quick second and say it. The fare tax is very similar to it's a national sales tax. It's got some rebates associated with it, but the underlying economic concept is that if you penalize someone for earning money, they're less likely to earn money. If you incentivize earning money, they earn money. If you penalize spending of money, people spend less money.
It's just what we need right now, right?
Well, not necessarily, but the idea of being able to save and invest without being taxed on the money, and then being taxed when you go to buy things with it, houses, cars, that sort of thing. It works really well in Texas.
If I could ask then,
sure.
If you've got two people, they go to school together, they go to college together, they graduate, they go and so work for one corporation. One eventually is making $500,000 a year. The other one is making $1 million a year. Since they're friends, they stay together. They have the same lifestyles, buy the same cars, same house, everything. One man making $500,000 spends all of his money.
Uh-huh.
The other man who has a similar lifestyle spends $500,000 of his money.
Uh-huh.
What happens to the other $500,000? The second man making $1 million, he gets that tax free then?
If he is under the fair tax, that would be the case.
So he makes $500,000 tax free.
Well, you know, you can draw a parallel there. Let's just say, when we look about the total money, the person who was spending the $500,000 but not putting any money in his 401k today, and let's say you have a guy who's earning $1 million, and he is between his 401k and a 457 plan and everything else he's doing, is not paying taxes on the other $500,000 because it's going into retirement plans. That's exactly the same. Now, I don't think the fare tax is going to happen.
I don't think
it's possible to happen. I think what's happened is it came out in the 1990s, 80s and 90s during a period of rapid growth in the economy where we were talking about the fact that people were spending too much money. They were running up debts and spending money rather than saving their money. Today we have a reversal of that where the savings rate is very high for corporate and for individuals. And people are not spending enough money, if anything. So, you know, I don't think the fare tax is going to happen. It'd be basically a 23% sales tax. And very frankly, I don't see any way we could institute that without such a phenomenal economic shock.
There would be a big shock. It would have to be very carefully done. Nobody has put in a way to do that. They would just do it all at once. That would be a massive shock to the system.
So the people who were vastly for it have basically backed away. Basically, the fundamental issue is to get rid of the tax on income and put the tax on the money you spent, because eventually, you're going to spend the money.
Well,
that's what money's for.
I used two small figures there, $1.5 million. Well, if you've got somebody, and I'm not talking about Bill Gates, but I'm talking about somebody that makes $15, $20, $30 million in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to spend that $15, $20, $30 million?
Sometimes.
He's going to have $15 or $20 million of that he's going to not pay taxes on.
But the point is, if he's investing the money, take
he's
Warren
not
Buffett.
Paying taxes. I invest money too, but I don't make $20 million.
Right.
I still pay taxes on what
and
I invest.
There are people that put their money in municipal bonds and they don't pay any taxes on it.
Right.
Well, the point is that, you know, for instance, Warren Buffett is a multi-billionaire, but his, you know, and he's in basically the same position. It would put us in a similar position to him. He doesn't spend billions of dollars a year, and he doesn't pay significant taxes on the money he doesn't spend.
That's why it seems to me that a flat tax would be better. If you make $1 million, you pay 10%. If you make $1,000, you pay 10%. If you go out and pick up aluminum cans and you make $100 that year, you pay 10%. You pay $10.
The problem is that you can't fund the government on 10%.
No, it would have to be a lot more than that.
Figure. I mean, no, it would be 20, 25, 30, whatever. But everybody, whether you made $1,000 or whether you made $1 billion, you pay 10, 15, or 20%. Everybody pays the same.
You'd wind up paying, for whatever it's worth, about 23%. But let's just say you're making $2,000 a month and you're trying to feed a couple of kids and support a wife or something like that, and the government takes 23% of that away from you, that's pretty disastrous.
Yeah.
Now, if you're making $200,000 a month and the government takes 23% of that away, probably nobody's going to starve to death.
That's the difference between progressive and regressive tax. I don't think those are the right words for it, but that's the definition that's been given to them. Basically, rich people with lots of money spend a lot more money than people that don't have lots of money. That's just, but
I'll Jake said we're both buying it, but I will tell you very frankly, I think our, as goofy as it may sound, the system we have today is not that bad. It's just too complicated. Conceptually, the concept that we have, which, by the way, it's the fundamental concept of our tax code right now, is the Internal Revenue Act of 1986.
Which was Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan. And until we put a bunch of complexities into it, which we have added each year, many, many, many complexities
to it.
They
called it a flat tax when it was put in.
Yeah, it was basically a two-stage and then a three-stage. And when we got to three stages and a reduction in capital gains taxes, we probably had a pretty good system. And unfortunately, that was back in the 1990s. Since then, there have been a host of what I consider to be irrational changes to the law that make it phenomenally complex.
Yeah.
Therein is the problem.
There's a well-known group of people that go every year to the major tax preparers out there, major chain tax preparers, and they bring them the same information to each of them. And they've been doing this for about 10 years. And during that 10-year period, they haven't gotten the same answer on their taxes. Basically, prepare for filing. They haven't gotten the same answer from any two preparers. That says we have a system that is broken.
Yeah, it's too complex, and we do need, and fundamentally, Congress is not even able to agree on what time it is most of the time. So I don't think that we can sit down and do something complex. But an overhaul of the tax system with some serious discussion about what we want it to do is in order. Do I think it's likely to happen anytime soon? No, because there's too much hatred back and forth in Congress. Until we get some kind of redistricting law that changes the way that congressional districts are gerrymandered to produce the most radical people to go to Congress, we're probably not going to get anywhere, so we got to live with what we got. Okay?
Yeah. We're about out of time. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
We actually do give advice for fees, besides just doing kind of inanities on the radio. We do this for a living.
We manage investment portfolios for people who have enough money that if they don't do well, they won't do well. It's the easiest way to put it. Basically, if you're in a position where you are needing to live on and you're going to really rely on your investment portfolio, then you should hire an investment professional who's a fiduciary and pay them a fee. Just like you need to pay a fee if you have a large financial transaction in real estate, hire an attorney, pay a fee. If you want to control your estate and get it set up right, hire an attorney, pay a fee. And so I think you need to hire an investment advisor and pay a fee if you have enough money that it counts. And you can contact us. You can, actually.
Yes.
Locally, we have a voicemail today, but we certainly have people available. You won't even get a phone tree. A human being answers the phone. 947-1111 is the personal wealth coach, and that's what we do.
Or you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can reach us by email, either one of us or both of us. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com, as in the personal wealth coach. You can also go to our webpage, which is tpwc.com. We're still a little bit under construction, but it's come a long ways. You can listen to podcasts there. Again, that's tpwc.com. So until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Fair, balanced. Your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.